Thank you for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you join us here. And if you'd like to join our conversations, you're more than welcome to do so. Phone numbers are as follows, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email. That address is jx@jeffnet.org. Some of us had to scrape ice off our car windshields this morning. Cold weather is here, and with it the need to heat our homes. For some, it's a bit of a balance, watching the temperature reading on the thermostat versus keeping an eye on the bottom line of the utility bill. Subtle differences in home construction, insulation, and heating sources can make a big difference in how much you'll spend to heat your home. So let's talk to somebody who's got some figures on the cost of various heat sources and what they're likely to cost over the course of this fall and winter. Chris McGill is the Vice President of Policy Analysis at the American Gas Association and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeff. Now, I'm sitting in my offices about two blocks from Capitol Hill. You're not going to hold that against me this morning, are you?
No, but I'm glad you pointed out you're in Washington. So how's your business going these days? So you're not connected directly to the federal government. It must be about the normal flow.
Well, we are an advocacy organization in Washington for local gas utilities. So when the government shuts down or when we have these kinds of events, they influence what we are doing on a daily basis around energy, for sure. So it does impact us, but we're here and we're at work.
So you advocate for local gas utilities as opposed to the any sort of national entities. How does that work? I mean, what are you advocating for generally?
Well, by local gas utilities, I mean those companies that serve individual customers, residential, small commercial customers, even industrial customers, in virtually every state in the United States. All 200 publicly owned natural gas companies in the United States are members of AGA. So we are the part of the natural gas value chain that is closest to the consumer. My particular history is that I also worked in the producing community as a geologist. So many of these things around the market, around natural gas supply and expectations for the winter fuels are things that I look at and study routinely.
Wow, so you really know the process basically from in the ground to the final consumer.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right, well, that's a good set of skills to have. Let's talk, though, about what you do there, though, because you do apparently track heating costs for all kinds of fuels, not just for the one you're promoting.
Well, we look at natural gas specifically, since that's our primary fuel, but obviously natural gas competes in the marketplace, or at least exists in the marketplace, with other fuel resources for individuals that are heating their homes or drying their clothes or whatever. The Energy Information Administration, which is part of the Department of Energy, publishes a winter fuels outlook on all of the fuels. We discussed a little more than a week ago our view of the coming winter heating season for natural gas on a national average basis. And we saw for consumers likely a 5-10% increase in bills this year compared to last year. And who has a memory that goes much further back than just last year? Whereas the Energy Information Administration saw it a little bit higher, about 13% higher for the average consumer compared to last year, remembering that even those costs for natural gas are below the five-year average, we're still in a very, very good period right now for energy costs associated with natural gas. Now, those costs themselves, the 10, the 13% that I'm referring to, that's the bill to the customer, and let's remember that what that entails then is the cost of the molecules and then the cost of the infrastructure and the delivery process to get that to the customer.
I think a lot of people might have assumed that the numbers would actually be somewhat down. I mean, we hear so much about the abundance in the gas supply since the fracking technology came online.
Yeah, the increase, really, again, we're going back to this being a bill. A bill is based on not only what the cost of the natural gas or other energy product might be, but it's how much you use. And across the nation last year, the country for the six-month period, October 1st through March the 31st, was actually 17.5% warmer than normal. So any return back to more normal conditions probably means that the average consumer will use more. Thus, the bill will go up.
All right. I see what you're saying. So this is, it's not a matter of the actual cost per unit. So what are the cost per unit differences, say, between this year and last year?
Well, for natural gas, last year was actually an extremely low period for natural gas on a million BTU basis, something under $3 per million BTUs at the national hubs where gas is traded and then transported to customers. That number this year is, I looked this morning, it was about $3.75. So it's up a little bit. Oil prices go up and down. Cost for electricity is actually a little bit lower, very slightly lower this year than last year, because natural gas prices have been so low. And part of your electricity is generated by natural gas. So there is a little bit of an intertwined relationship here. But in general, for natural gas specifically, the price is up slightly, although compared to history, it's still very good. And consumption may very well be a little larger this year than last year for the average consumer. So overall, there is some expectation that bills will be higher.
So, Chris McGill, what are the numbers on penetration? I mean, in the distribution of various heat sources, what is natural gas up to? Because I was looking at numbers from the 2000 census, indicated that natural gas was the heat source in 51% of American homes. I have to believe that's increased somewhat.
It's still about half, a little bit higher than that, but still about half of homes heat their home with natural gas. But technologies change. The heat pump has become more efficient and has found advances in various parts of the country as a heating source, as well as, of course, an air conditioning source. So if you look at new construction, actually the balance of new homes using natural gas as a heating source has fallen slightly, and heat pumps are up slightly around the country. So again, that's something that depends on the region that you're in, and you know, really as a consumer, what you prefer, and often that's what it is. It's a consumer choice.
So how do those regional differences work, Chris? Because I notice when I'm looking at the numbers, I have the numbers from the Department of Energy for both California and Oregon, the two states we serve, and so I see the percentage of Oregon homes heating with natural gas, 35%. California, 71%. Mm-hmm. But then when you get to electricity, it's 49% of the homes heating with that in Oregon and only 22% in California. I have to believe that regional differences would include things like the fact that with the Bonneville Power Administration, electricity is a lot cheaper, particularly in northern Oregon.
That would be part of it. And then, of course, California, of course, has some larger urban areas, and where you have a concentration in an urban area like San Francisco or Los Angeles or San Diego, gas infrastructure is probably going to be stronger there, as opposed to if your principal situation for the population distribution is more rural. It might take longer, or there may not be gas service out to a rural location. So those things matter also, those fundamental demographics.
Chris McGill's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Vice President of Policy Analysis at the American Gas Association. You can join us here in the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about heating costs for this winter. Our phone number's on the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So you were saying earlier that because we had a pretty warm winter, it sounds like just last year, was it 17% higher than normal? Is that what you said?
Yes, for the country as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Just per capita, are we using less also because of changes in consumption patterns, increases in efficiency, things like that?
Well, that's a fair observation, particularly for the residential commercial market. In fact, you might call the American consumer and their natural gas consumption the poster child for conservation and efficiency. If you look at the number of customers there were in 1970 for the United States, residential customers, small commercial, it was about 38 million. Today, there are over 65 million of those same customers, and that 65 million uses the same volume of gas that the 38 million did 40 years ago. So the efficiency, the efficient use of natural gas, individual consumers that do things to make their home shell, windows, et cetera, more efficient. And then, of course, every time you buy a new appliance, essentially you're getting a more efficient appliance also in a household. So we've seen really about 1% per year for the last 40 years of efficiency gains. And that's an extraordinary story.
Now, as I look again at the numbers that the Energy Department provides state by state, and I did get a chance to look at some states outside of our region, you find some variations here, like in Oregon, Oregon has a category for fuel oil where California has none. Some of the northeastern states, and I remember this from growing up, New York and Connecticut, a lot of people heat their homes with oil. And again, it sounds like it's just a case of what the infrastructure is in that region for delivery of whatever you need to heat your home.
Right, and there are conversions every year from fuel oil to natural gas as that infrastructure catches up in a place like or a location like New England, for example. And, you know, there are some economic incentives for doing that. Again, going back to the EIA numbers, to heat your home with heating oil on average across the United States for those places that do it, that five-year average, taking out just last year, but looking at the five-year average from 2007 to 2012 was about $1,700 over the winter heating season period per customer. The comparable number for natural gas was only about $700. So there's a significant difference. And today, on a million BTU basis, fuel oil is still, you know, prices change day to day, week to week. But fuel oil is still 3 to 4 times more than natural gas on a million BTU basis for a heating application. So there is a good economic incentive to look at that as a possibility. And then, of course, there are environmental issues and all those sorts of things, too. But New England grew up at the end of the pipeline grid here in the United States. People heated with fuel oil because that was the resource that's there. We have conversions occurring, really tens of thousands of conversions on an annual basis, and that infrastructure is catching up with those who are looking for natural gas service.
Let us take a call. We have Bill in Sunny Valley on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Chris McGill from the American Gas Association.
Good program, Jeffrey. Thanks a lot. Good morning, Chris. I understand that we're selling our natural gas compressed as LNG, liquefied natural gas now. And I was wondering, and we're selling it to countries overseas out of the States. And I was just wondering if that's affecting the price that you're talking about, the increase. And I'll take my answer off here.
All right, Bill, thanks for the question. Very much appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Great question. The United States is not yet exporting LNG, liquefied natural gas. The facilities to complete that export process or to create the LNG, there's only one facility in the United States being built for that export purpose. Right now, that is at Sabine Pass in Louisiana. The expectation for exports from that facility, the first incremental additions for exports are that it might occur by 2015, and the capacity for that export would be about 1.3 billion cubic feet per day. Now, let me put that into perspective. The country today produces about 65 billion cubic feet per day. The reason that the Gulf Coast area, Louisiana, has been really the first place that these kinds of projects have been considered is that the supply balance in the country has shifted. New gas resources in the eastern United States require less from the traditional producing areas, and the traditional producing areas are looking for outlets. They're virtually looking for demand for their natural gas. There have been a number of studies done looking at the LNG export possibilities over the next decade or so. Most of those look at somewhere between 4, 5, 6 billion cubic feet per day of potential exports in that time frame. And most of those outlooks look at the potential for changes in the domestic price in the tens of cents, not dollars. And I told you already today that the price today at Henry Hub in Louisiana was about $3.70 per million BTU, that the potential increases that would come from that demand would be measured in the tens of cents, not dollars. So if we're talking about something on that scale, then what we're really doing is simply demanding the natural gas that is there and that is available.
It's been interesting to watch the process, though. And do you have a few more minutes? Because we can extend about another 4 minutes or so.
Yes, sir.
All right, Bill. Chris McGill is our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange, Vice President of Policy and Policy Analysis at the American Gas Association. 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. The Oregon coast, Coos Bay specifically, would be the home to the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal. And we've watched as that went first from an import terminal, as originally envisioned, and then to an export terminal with pipeline attached in both cases. So obviously some great swings. And from what you're saying here, then the whole issue is that there is just such an abundance of gas supply that there's a search for demand.
That's very true. I mean, that is the vision for the marketplace right now. If you look at supply demand in the marketplace today, you would say that the market is demand constrained, not supply constrained. So we talk about LNG exports as a possibility for new demand. We're also talking about transportation uses for natural gas, whether that's long-line trucking. And Bill noted LNG, liquefied natural gas. That could be a fuel for long-line trucking. Compressed natural gas for lighter-duty vehicles. There are new market opportunities for natural gas, and it would seem to be a resource opportunity for the country that is looking for this new demand to meet the supply abundance that we see here in North America.
Let's take a call from Cynthia in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Chris McGill from the American Gas Association.
Yes, I would like to at first when I tuned in, I just could hardly believe some of the things this fellow was saying, and then all of a sudden it dawned on me he's representing the natural gas industry.
Correct.
Which explains a lot. So the LNG pipeline that's they're using actually eminent domain to seize Oregon property, private property, to try to put this pipeline through is a really important issue here, and if people want to get involved, Riverkeepers has a wonderful video.
Mm-hmm.
It's available online that talks about this issue. I unfortunately have natural gas heat. I turn it way down because I do not want to support this industry. And I use electric whenever I can, space heating. Generally just use my gas in December and January because I just do not want to support this industry and what they represent. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that thought there, Cynthia. Any response there, Chris?
We are all Americans. We all have our opinions. We're all customers and consumers. Obviously, the electricity that Cynthia is using has to be generated by something. Could be wind power, could be coal, could be natural gas. Each of those things have their own profile as far as how they impact the environment, how much they cost. So I'm happy that she's able to do what she chooses to do.
Let's take another call from Catherine in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Chris McGill from the American Gas Association.
Hello. I heat with propane.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it cost so much? And I bought a brand new propane furnace. I can't find any organization that I'm eligible for a rebate like you can on electricity and gas.
All right. Good to know. Thanks for that. We'll take it up with Chris. Thanks for that, Catherine. Any thoughts on that one, Chris?
Well, again, state by state, distribution company by distribution company, those opportunities are mostly local. As a fuel, according to the Energy Information Administration, propane is priced more in the range where heating oil was for those numbers that I gave you compared to the other options. So I understand that there is an expense there greater than some of the other options that are available. But again, often propane is what's available for a location. Depending on where you live, there may not be other infrastructure there to support another heating source. So I'm not exactly certain of her situation, but you know, those are, again, we go back to not only choices, but what the infrastructure is for any given area.
And natural gas infrastructure, as you pointed out, does tend to be more like urban and suburban infrastructure?
Well, certainly where there's a concentration of people, that helps distribute the costs of delivering that service to the customers,
okay,
certainly.
So, all right. So in general, we're going to pay just a little more for natural gas this winter. And anything else, everything else holding steady, going up, going down?
Electricity for home heating is expected to be slightly lower, about 2% lower. Propane and natural gas, 13 and 9% higher, according to EIA. But again, that natural gas heat is a very, very good value still.
All right. Chris McGill, Vice President of Policy Analysis at the American Gas Association. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
Right. Back from this break, we'll get to Garrison Keillor. Please stay tuned.